Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories, along with Anna Mateo. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the Cambodian People's Party says it has won every seat in the country's parliament. The party released the statement after national elections on Sunday. The results would effectively make Cambodia a one-party state. The CPP said it now controls all 125 seats in the National Assembly. But rights groups say the election results are misleading because the main opposition party was banned. Sokhi San is a spokesman for the CPP. He said he could not confirm the official vote count, but I can say that the CPP will get most of the seats at the National Assembly. The result of the election shows that there is a progression of democracy in Cambodia as people used their right to decide the future of the country, he said. Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen is now set to extend his already 33-year rule by another 5 years. 19 minor parties took part in the election. They won only a small percentage of the vote. Information released Monday by the National Election Committee also suggests the CPP will win every assembly seat. The committee says more than 6.8 million registered voters marked ballots. There were almost 600,000 invalid ballots. The Associated Press News Agency reports that they appeared to be cast as protest by voters who wished to keep their identities secret. The CPP's only real opponent in the election, the Cambodia National Rescue Party, was dissolved late last year. Its leader, Kim Sokha, was put in jail. He was accused of inciting an internationally supported plot to overthrow the government. In reaction, the CNRP launched what it called a Clean Finger campaign, urging voters to boycott the general elections. Hun Sen's government threatened criminal action against supporters of the campaign. The government also threatened action against Cambodian citizens if they chose to not vote. Criticism of the elections came from Western governments and other groups. The United States called the vote neither free nor fair. The U.S. government said it would consider punitive measures, including an expansion of visa restrictions on top Cambodian government officials. In a statement, the White House Office of the Press Secretary said, "We are profoundly disappointed in the government's choice to disenfranchise millions of voters who are rightly proud of their country's development over the past 25 years." The statement went on to say that the campaign was marked by threats from national and local leaders to punish those choosing not to vote. Australia's Foreign Minister, Julie Bishop, also questioned the election results. In a statement, she said that Hun Sen's actions to remove his political opponents have cancelled more than 25 years of progress toward democracy. Australia, the United States, Canada, the European Union, and Japan all said they had no plans to send representatives to observe the voting. The National Election Commission said it would announce full totals on August 11th. The official results will be released on August 15th.
Once a week, a group of Egyptian women gather at a forgotten park outside of Cairo. There, they begin to run, jump, and climb over walls and objects. The women are enjoying the sport of parkour. The activity is very unusual for women in the socially conservative country. The sport of parkour started in France in the 1980s. Its name comes from the French word parcours, which means course or route. It involves moving through a city setting as fast as possible by running, climbing, and jumping over, around, or under any barrier in a path. The women have met every week for the past 6 months. Together, they hope to form Egypt's first professional parkour team. 10 women took part in a recent training that centered on building upper body strength. They also learned different methods of dealing with surroundings. A crowd often forms to watch the women train. Egyptians are not used to seeing women playing sports in such an open public area. Sometimes people take pictures or videos. Zeynep Helal is one of the parkour players. She told the Reuters news agency, "It is natural that people did not accept it because they were not used to it. They did not accept the idea that girls could play sports, let alone on the street. It is not common for women to play such sports on the streets in Egypt." A 2017 Thomson Reuters Foundation study on how women are treated in the world's biggest cities rated Cairo as the world's most dangerous megacity for women. Mohammed Omran guides the women in the training. They train hard on climbing barriers, landing correctly after jumps, and noticing possibilities in the buildings around them. "Women are now training, and more women are starting to come," Omran said. As the sport spreads, the acceptance of women training increases, and it is not unusual for women to have a team and train, he added. Parkour is not a common sport in Egypt. It has no governing group. But Parkour Egypt, a group made up of women and men, has grown quickly after starting off with just a few players. Hilal said, "It needs more time to evolve, and the sport needs to spread more so that people would learn about it." Last year, Britain became the first country to officially recognize parkour as a sport.
From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Is your bedroom really hot? If it is, it may be affecting your memory and other thinking skills. Heat waves sometimes kill people who are very old, very young, or in poor health. But new research shows that sleeping in a hot room can affect the thinking ability of even healthy young adults. This finding comes from Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Researchers there looked at 24 students before, during, and after a Boston area heat wave. Of the 24 students, 4 slept in rooms with air conditioning, also called AC for short, and 20 slept in rooms without AC. The experiment lasted 12 days. The temperature of the room without air conditioning, or AC, averaged 26 degrees Celsius. The temperature in the rooms with AC averaged 21 degrees Celsius. Jose Guillermo Cedeño Llorent led the study. He is a professor and researcher at Harvard's School of Public Health. He says he and his team considered several conditions in the rooms.
We measured very intensively every 5 minutes several environmental factors, which include temperature, relative humidity, carbon dioxide, and noise in each of the bedrooms of these participants throughout the duration of the study.
He said they also used devices that recorded physical activity, including heart rate, perspiration or sweat, and some sleep conditions. The researchers also noted how much water and caffeine the students drank and how much time they spent outside. The results were unexpected.
To our surprise, we found a very significant effect of detrimental cognitive function among those students that we included in our study that they didn't have air conditioning during this heatwave period.
Basically, they found great harm to the thinking ability of the study participants in rooms without air conditioning. During the heat wave, students in buildings without AC performed, on average, 13% worse at these tests than those in cooler rooms. Specifically, the students who slept without AC during a heat wave were slower to respond and had difficulty making quick decisions. Daisy Chang is a psychologist at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. She says there could be other reasons for their poor performance.
A whole host of reasons could potentially explain this kind of exposure effect. You know, it's not necessarily directly exposed to heat. It could have affected their sleep quality, they're less rested, they have less energy or mental resources or ability to focus.
The rooms without AC had fans and open windows, so they were louder at night. This could have made sleeping difficult. On the other hand, air-conditioned rooms can hold higher levels of carbon dioxide. This can also affect a person's ability to think. However, the students slept better in a cooler room.
We find that heat waves are impacting us all. These impacts extend to the populations like young and healthy university students. And we find significant effects on the way they think in their cognitive functions.
Health experts at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that the body temperature of humans should stay close to 37 degrees Celsius. At higher inner temperatures, body operations can start to fail. If the body's temperature rises enough, it shuts down completely and the person dies. Earlier research centered on how hot weather affects at-risk populations. The CDC says older adults, the very young, and sick people are most at risk. On its website, the CDC lists other conditions that could put you in a high-risk group for getting sick in hot weather. They include being overweight, having a fever, not drinking enough water, having heart disease or poor circulation, having mental health problems, having a sunburn, using prescription drugs, using alcohol. For tips on staying healthy during a heat wave, please read this VOA Learning English story. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today, we tell about the Korean War. The biggest problem facing Dwight Eisenhower when he became President of the United States was the continuing conflict in Korea. Eisenhower was elected in November 1952. At the time, the United States had been helping South Korea fight North Korea for more than 2 years. About 20 other members of the United Nations were also helping the South. The UN members provided troops, equipment, and medical aid.
I shall go to Korea.
During the American presidential election campaign, Eisenhower announced that he would go to Korea. He thought such a trip would help end the war. Eisenhower kept his promise. He went to Korea after he won the election, but before he was sworn in as president. Yet the fighting did not stop in Korea until July of the next year, 1953. The war started when North Korean troops invaded South Korea. Both sides believed they should control all of the country. The dream of a united Korea was a powerful one. From 1910 until World War II, Korea had been under Japanese rule. In an agreement at the end of the war, troops from the Soviet Union occupied the North. They accepted the surrender of Japanese troops and set up a military government. American troops did the same in the South. The border dividing North and South was the geographic line known as the 38th parallel. A few years later, the United Nations General Assembly ordered free elections for all of Korea. With UN help, the South established the Republic of Korea. Syngman Rhee was elected the first president. On the other side of the 38th parallel, however, Soviet troops refused to let UN election officials enter the North. The Soviet Union supported the creation of a communist government there called the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Kim Il-sung was named premier. Five years after the end of World War II, the United States had withdrawn almost all of its troops from South Korea. It was not clear if America would defend the South from attack. South Korea had an army, but it was smaller and less powerful than the North Korean army. North Korea decided the time was right to invade. On June 25, 1950, North Korean soldiers crossed the 38th parallel. The UN Security Council demanded that they go back. 2 days later, the council approved military support for South Korea.
The Soviet delegate boycotted the meeting that day. If he had been present, the resolution would have been defeated. The UN demand did not stop the North Korean troops. They continued to push south. In a week, they were at the edge of the capital, Seoul. Harry Truman, America's president at that time, ordered air and sea support for South Korea. A few days later, he announced that American ground forces would also be sent. Truman wanted an American to command UN troops in Korea. The UN approved his choice, General Douglas MacArthur. Week after week, more UN forces arrived in the south. Yet by August, they had been pushed back to the Pusan perimeter. This was a battle line around an area near the city of Pusan in the southeast corner of Korea. North Korean forces attempted to break through the Pusan perimeter. They began a major attack on August 6th. They lost many men, however, and by the end of the month, they withdrew. The next month, General MacArthur directed a surprise landing of American Marines in South Korea. They arrived at the port of Incheon on the northwest coast. The landing was extremely dangerous. Water levels could rise or fall as much as 9 meters in a single day. The boats had to get close to the coastline and land at high tide. If they waited too long, the water level would drop and they would be trapped in the mud with little protection. The soldiers on the boats would be easy targets. The landing at Incheon was successful. The additional troops quickly divided the North Korean forces, which had been stretched from north to south. At the same time, UN air and sea power destroyed the Northern Army's lines of communication. On October 1st, South Korean troops entered North Korea. They captured the capital, Pyongyang. Then they moved toward the Yalu River, the border between North Korea and China. China warned against moving closer to the border. General MacArthur ordered the troops to continue their attacks. He repeatedly said he did not believe that China would enter the war in force. MacArthur was wrong. Several hundred thousand Chinese soldiers crossed into North Korea in October and November. Still, MacArthur thought the war would end by December 25th, the Christmas holiday. This was not to happen. The UN troops were forced to withdraw from Pyongyang. And by the day before Christmas, there had been a huge withdrawal by sea from the coastal city of Hongnam. In the first days of 1951, the North Koreans recaptured Seoul. The UN troops withdrew about 40 kilometers south of the city. They reorganized and 2 months later regained control of Seoul. Then the war changed. The two sides began fighting in an area north of the 38th parallel. They exchanged control of the same territory over and over again. Men were dying, but no one was winning. The cost in lives was huge. General MacArthur had wanted to enter China and attack Manchuria. He also had wanted to use nationalist Chinese troops against the communists. President Truman feared that these actions might start another world war.
If we do have another world war, it will be an atomic war. We could expect many atomic bombs to be dropped on American cities, and a single one of them could cause many more times the casualties than we have suffered in all the fighting in Korea. I do not want to be responsible for bringing that about.
When MacArthur disagreed in public with the president's policies on Korea, including the general's statement, "There is no substitute for victory," Truman dismissed MacArthur.
It was with the deepest personal regret that I found myself compelled to take this action. General MacArthur is one of our greatest military commanders, but the cause of world peace is much more important than any individual.
In June 1951, the Soviet delegate to the United Nations proposed a ceasefire for Korea. Peace talks began, first at Kaesong, then at Panmunjom. By November, hope for a settlement was strong. But negotiators could not agree about several issues, including the return of prisoners. The UN demanded that prisoners of war be permitted to choose if they wanted to go home. The different issues could not be settled after more than a year. Finally, in November 1952, the peace talks were suspended. Fighting continued during the negotiations. As it did, President Truman lost support. This was one reason why he decided not to seek re-election. The new president, Dwight Eisenhower, took office in January 1953. Eisenhower had campaigned to end the war. He was willing to take strong action to do this. Years later, he wrote that he secretly threatened to expand the war and use nuclear weapons if the Soviets did not help restart the peace talks. Such measures were not necessary. In a few months, North Korea accepted an earlier UN offer to trade prisoners who were sick or wounded. The two sides finally signed an armistice agreement on July 27, 1953. The agreement stopped the fighting and provided for the exchange of about 90,000 prisoners of war. It also permitted prisoners to choose if they wanted to go home. The war in Korea damaged almost all of the country. As many as 2 million people may have died, including many civilians. After the war, the United States provided hundreds of thousands of soldiers to help the South guard against attack from the North. Half a century has passed since the truce, yet Korea is still divided, and many of the same issues still threaten the Korean people and the world. The Korean conflict increased efforts in the United States to develop a weapon more deadly than the atomic bombs that had been used against Japan to end World War II. These efforts led to the hydrogen bomb. The Soviets were developing such a weapon too. They had already developed and tested an atomic bomb. The 1950s found Americans at home feeling hopeful about the economic future while also living under the threat of nuclear war.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.